Welcome to another episode of Superheroes and Sci-Fi, Musings with Adam and Ryan. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Ryan. Ryan, how's it going?
It's been a bit of a rough week, you know, starting my new job, and it's whooping my ass, but hey, I'm still here, so.
That's it, we just power through, and at the end of the week, you are lucky enough to talk to me, or unlucky.
Exactly, fantastic. It's a fantastic way to end off a work week.
And likewise, talking with you about all this stuff, so that's good. we have some, we have a lot of pieces of news, but I decided to sparse it out. We'll do two this week, and then a couple more next week. But there's two pieces of news that I wanted to bring to a listener's attention. So there is an animated series being developed by Amazon based on a comic book by Ryan Kirkman. It's called Invincible. Now, do you know anything about Invincible, Ryan?
No, but outside of The Walking Dead, it's the one Robert Kirkman book that I really do want to, even before we started this podcast, I really did want to get into and read it.
Now exactly. Excuse, which is great. So basically, the character of Invincible is the son of another superhero called Omni-Man, and he's an extraterrestrial.
I was gonna say, like, I think the only thing I know about the character Invincible is that he's like what, half human, half alien or something.
Yeah, it's a race called Viltrumite, I think, or that's how it's pronounced. And so anyway, he's inherited his some of his father's abilities, and under the tutelage of his father, he decides to protect Earth, and he also, you know, as any teen would, has trouble adjusting to his newfound powers and stuff like that, and coping with what he actually is, which is, you know, part alien, part human, excuse me. So it's an interesting concept.
It is. It really does sound like a great, like, because, you know, we have the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe. Sure, let's throw in Valiant, because that's starting to get up and running.
Now Image has a few.
Because I've always thought that, like, Invincible is a great just kind of... Doesn't it have a couple of, like, mini-series spin-offs or something?
You're thinking of, from what I understand, you're thinking of Black Hammer.
Black maybe.
Which is Dark Horse, I believe.
But, you know, Invincible is this pretty... You know, from what I've heard, pretty great, just standalone superhero universe, and following this one character throughout his life, where you don't need to have, where it's not as big as a Marvel or a DC, where it can kind of get overwhelming. If you want to just kind of read a more, you know, constrained, self-contained superhero world, something like an Astro City or Invincible is like a perfect.
It's a title that everybody's recommended to me. Read it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, eventually we're going to read it. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is because it is getting an animated series, and Robert Kirkman will be, you know, producing and heavily involved in bringing it to animated life. And my editor-in-chief over at Revenge of the Fans, Mario Francisco Robles, has an exclusive. He's uncovered the voice cast for the series. So one of the characters, or the actors, I should say, that Kirkman is reuniting from The Walking Dead is Steven Yeun.
Woo!
So he's bringing him on board. He's also bringing on Kerry Payton, who's voiced, you know, a heck of a ton of DC characters.
Yeah, he's Cyborg on the Teen Titans shows, right?
Yeah, and I think he's also Aqualad, if I remember correctly, on
and that's actually another carryover from Walking Dead. He plays I want to say it's his name's Ezekiel.
Yes, that's right.
Ezekiel from the Walking Dead TV show. Yeah.
He's also brought on board Deadpool 2 and the Joker actress Zazie Beetz, former Lex Luthor Clancy Brown, current / maybe former Spock Zachary Quinto, somebody named Jason Mantzoukas, who I've never heard of, Jillian Jacobs, Andrew Reynolds, and Chris Diamantopoulos. That, I think it's right. I'm not sure on that, but that's how it's spelled, so I'll go with it. Just from the names I recognize, the cast sounds phenomenal.
And I'm sure these people who we may not personally know from anything, I'm sure that they'll do great. There's a reason why they've been cast. So.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Ewan Brown, Peyton, Zazie. This is going to be good.
It's a good cast. I'm curious to see what the animation style will look like, if they'll try and go along the lines of the comic book. That would be pretty cool.
Why do you think they're going the animated route? Would it be cheaper?
Probably to start. I mean, and then, you know, if the animated series does well, maybe they'll turn it into something live action. I know Amazon's doing The Tick.
Yes, which I've seen the first season of, and I love it.
Me too. I love it as well. So, again, something we can cover on the show, isn't it?
Exactly.
Nice? So, yeah, they do The Tick, and they're doing, if I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Amazon is behind the live-action adaptation of The Boys, correct?
It's Amazon. To the internet. Wow. I'm actually not prepared for that.
And The Boys is dynamite. So, so Amazon, I guess to have a little bit of variety, they have, if I'm right about The Boys, that means they have two live action, quote unquote, superhero properties. And so why not add an animated one to the mix? Would be my guess. But either way, I'm glad that this revered indie comic is getting the spotlight in another medium. So that's always a good thing. And like I said, when it comes to superheroes and or sci-fi, give me more.
Exactly. Yeah, I love Marvel. Yeah, I love DC. You know, those are my two favorites. You know, DC a little bit more, but I love them both.
I mean, I love them all. Like,
but give it all to me. I want to see what. I love seeing what exists outside of the big two.
It's like, I want to have some variety, you know.
That's why I'm actually, I have never read a single Valiant comic, but I am willing to embrace with big open arms their superhero cinematic universe once they get that up and rolling.
Oh, yes. And, I think we should try, what is it, Bloodshot?
Yeah, isn't that the one that Vin Diesel's doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Since that'll be
the first goal. Yeah.
Since that'll be their Iron Man or Man of Steel, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
I'm excited for this. This Invincible animated series. And kudos to Mario for breaking that scoop. Well done. He's on a roll with his animated scoops lately. Keep your eyes peeled to Revenge of the Fans for Mario Scoops. And if you want to read my articles, you can too. If you don't, don't. But I prefer if you did, but if you don't, it's your prerogative. But check it out for Mario Scoops. That's why I'm there. I don't read my own stuff. No, but I read all of them. They're good. The other articles are very informative too. But yeah, definitely Mario Scoops are top notch. Keep on the lookout for that, for those, more of that, because he's got more stuff coming there, so I've heard. So keep an eye out. The other non-DC or Marvel property that we've heard news of recently is a property called Reborn. Now, Reborn is part of the Millar World banner, which was recently bought by Netflix. I'm sure you heard the news. Right. And yeah. So they have many projects on the go. One of them is we haven't talked about this because we weren't doing this podcast when the news came out. But Steven S. DeKnight, who did the first season of Daredevil, and he did a couple of years on Smallville, he's producing and spearheading Netflix's TV series version of Jupiter's Legacy, one of Millar's superhero stories. Mm-hmm. So the next one that's been announced is Reborn, and it's going to be produced by Sandra Bullock and her production company, and directed by Lego Batman director Chris McKay.
So, Jupiter's Legacy, right?
Yeah.
Where that's a TV show, this is going to be a movie.
Yeah. Basically, they're splitting his properties. Some will be TV shows, some will be movies. We don't know when it's going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
We do know that. There's talk. And via Deadline, by the way, there's a source on this is Deadline, and they speculate that Sandra Bullock could in fact lead the series.
After I heard about this, I went to go do a quick little synopsis because I've unlike Invincible, where I'd heard of it, I'd never heard of Reborn, so I went to go take a look at it. Wow, it's a weird ass premise.
I'll give a little bit of a premise because I haven't read it either. It's on my list of things. Mm-hmm. I have a big list. My list does not just include Multiverse Wives, it also includes Comic Sans 3. But having said that, the synopsis is that this is obviously, as we mentioned before, written by Mark Millar and drawn by Greg Capullo. Who, if you don't know who Greg Capullo is, he was the artist on Scott Snyder's Batman run from the New 52 onward. And my friends, this was when Batman was good, as opposed to now when Tom King took over, turned it into a soap opera, where Batman and Catwoman call each other by stupid pet names while they're fighting criminals. But I digress.
I just hope history looks down kindly on Snyder and Capullo and consider that five-year run.
It's phenomenal. As
one of the definitive, absolutely definitive runs on Batman.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Greg Capullo's artist, and Reborn tells the story of an 80-year-old woman who dies in a Manhattan hospital, only to find herself reborn in the prime of her life, in the afterlife, in like sort of this magical, mystical world. And in this magical, mystical afterlife, she has to do battle against monsters and dragons because she's been thrust into an eternal war of good and evil. Along the way, through this mystical afterlife, she finds old friends and loved ones, and she actually partners up with her late father to sort of go through this battle of good and evil. So it's, like you said, it sounds oddball crazy, but that's my kind of crazy. And I can't wait to read the book. And
it sounds just crazy enough that I have to.
I hope Sandra Bullock does star, because I love Sandra Bullock in anything. Sign me up.
I have never been disappointed in a single one of her performances. I've always wanted to see her do something. It doesn't have to be superhero, but something based off of a comic book.
Yeah.
Yes. And the closest we ever got to that before this was, as far as I'm aware of, she was at the top of the list by WB to play Lois Lane in the failed Superman Lives movie.
Oh, well, she would have been such a great Lois.
She would have been fantastic. Yes.
And in honor of that she was Lois, or she would have been Lois in 1997's Superman Lives, I'm going to make her my Earth 97 wife. in honor of that fact, because Sandra Bullock still has it, my friends. But aside from all that, yeah, I mean, she anytime she lends her name to something, like, she doesn't do crap.
No.
And so I'm hoping that she gets in front of the camera as well as behind it in a producerial role.
It would surprise me if someone of her caliber were to jump on board this project with that not being, like, an intention of hers.
And Chris McKay, to me, after Lego Batman, you might as well take this guy to Rome and make him the first. I don't know if there are living saints, but if there isn't, canonize him and make him the first living saint. Because the Lego Batman is a masterful love letter to Batman. So,
yep.
I wanted him to do Nightwing. It seems like we're gonna have to wait, you know, as long as as long as we are for Nightwing, as we will have to for another Superman movie. However, if I have to wait for Nightwing, I at least love the idea of him being involved in a comic book related film. So mm-hmm. that makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I eagerly anticipate seeing this come to life and hearing about this production and all that stuff. We'll keep you posted on all of this. And eventually we will do a review of this, the comic. And we'll be able to get excited more so when we actually know what the heck is going on with this book. But before we segue into our actual topics of discussion, because we're talking about comic book related, you know, movies and television, I think I do have a comic book recommendation for this week. Now, I didn't read it.
Wow, you're better than me. Holy crap.
I didn't read it this week, but I've read it a couple times. It's a Mark Millar property, and it's called American Jesus. It's drawn by Peter Gross. And he's the artist. He worked on Lucifer when the comic was at Vertigo back in the day. And so basically the premise is that what if this boy discovered that he was the second coming of Jesus Christ, and he was able to perform miracles and had abilities that are not... normal for humans to have. How would he react to that? How would his life change? I did a review for it at Revenge of the Fans. It's up if you go on the site and search for it, you'll find it there. And in my review, I said it's essentially Smallville for Jesus. Mind you, there's no annoying Lana Lang, which is a bonus.
All right. If it was Smallville for Jesus, does that mean that Jesus and the Antichrist were palling around for years as teenagers?
not necessarily.
I swear to God, I'm just making that as a joke. Yeah. What?
No. But there is a twist. There's a twist at the end that I'm still waiting for the answer to. But I'm happy to report that Mark Millar is working on the sequel comic as we talk. And
so when was this done? Because, you know, DC is also doing some kind of second coming comic book, and I haven't read much up as to what its story is, but it appears to be causing a little kerfuffle among people.
Has that come out yet? Because I read that just for fun.
I don't think so. I think there's that. I saw something about like a petition signed by 100,000 people trying to get it to not be published.
Why?
Because I guess anything depicting Jesus is, I don't know. It almost sounds like there's some crowd out there that wants to start, you know, treating Jesus like how you know, the Prophet Muhammad gets treated, you know, where, you know, can't say anything good, you know, bad about him or show him or whatever.
Yeah, but how do you know? But how do these people know? Explain to me. How do they know whatever's in the DC book or the Vertigo book? I think it is negative, paints Jesus in a negative light, Like, how do you know that? You haven't read the story.
Has that ever stopped people?
No, but just the ridiculousness of people astounds me. I don't know why it does, but it does. This was done in 2009.
Okay.
But there is a twist, and it's fantastic. And I may get lynched for this. I may go to hell for this. How can I word myself? How can I say this with actual fact being put in there? I am a semi-practicing Catholic. And so what I'm going to say is this. Had the Bible been as cool as American Jesus Volume 1, I would go to church more often. But yeah, I recommend this book. And if any of you out there are looking for a Mark Millar book to read that you haven't, give this a peek, because this is being turned into American Jesus, from what I understand, is going to be a TV series.
Oh, you know that that's just going to go over very well with certain religious groups.
The 1 million moms?
Probably. And as you were talking, I was looking up exactly what all the kerfuffle for Second Coming was. Apparently, the petition reads that they are appalled by DC's decision to publish Second Coming, a comic that features Jesus Christ as a clueless superhero sidekick.
Sounds humorous to me.
Exactly.
It's fiction, for the love of God. No pun intended.
And I know that what I'm about to say is probably a gross generalization, but after the week I've had, I just kind of want to say F it. I'm sure that the majority of the people who are getting upset about this enough to sign a petition are also the ones who love to throw around the word snowflake.
Could be. Well, what I'm going to say is this. I'm going to read it just because I know it's going to piss people off.
Exactly. How about that? Isn't it fun to love something if it upsets people?
It is. You should have seen about my week on Twitter. It was fun. I won't specify it here, but I'll tell you on the off the air, because if I do it here, we're going to get more hate mail. So I'm not going to do that here. But that's the news. I'm excited. And that's my comic recommendation. American Jesus Volume 1, Chosen.
All I did was pretty much sleep all week if I wasn't working, so I don't have a comic recommendation. I'm sorry.
And if you want to buy the physical copy and send it to any groups that complain, I would fully endorse that. But there it is. That's the news and the recommendation. So Ryan, why don't we get to the second week of our television roundup for Project Blue Book. And actually, Project Blue Book is technically the third episode. And the second episode of Roswell, New Mexico. So, Project Blue Book, what was it about this week, Ryan?
Today, on Project Blue Book, this week, I mean. I'm sorry, I just watched the episode today, so it's so fresh in my mind.
For you, it's
today. Yeah. I'm a bad fan. I keep forgetting the captain's name.
I'm going to look it up.
But, Professor... Okay. Because we are prepared. Can't you tell? We are prepared. Professor Hynek and the army captain that's joined him on Project Blue Book go down to Texas to investigate an incident called the Lubbock Lights, in which between over a 2 month period of time in 1951, I believe, the residents of Lubbock, Texas reported seeing a V-shaped formation of balls of light flying through the sky. Actually, if you do a quick Google check, there are actually alleged eyewitness photographs of this V-shape formation in the night sky. That I think the actual real-world photographs look rather impressive. Of course, there always when it comes to a UFO sighting of this magnitude, there always has to be some kind of official government response. And for many years, the official position of the U.S. government when it, in regards to the Lubbock Lights incident was that it was traffic lights being reflected off the bottoms of a flock of plovers, which is some kind of bird that I've never heard of, but apparently exists.
That's believable.
Yeah.
I say with the utmost sarcasm. by the way, the captain's name is Michael Quinn.
Michael Quinn. Okay, so Captain. Captain Quinn.
From now on, I'm just gonna refer to him as Harley Quinn's pretend brother, and go from there.
And Professor Hynek will always now be
my choice for Commissioner.
Commissioner Gordon, yes.
okay. So here's what I liked about I love the episode in the way they, first of all, visually in the way they portrayed the lights and the, mm-hmm. the way they moved and all that. The whole nine yards visually looked phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And once again, you can see that, you know, not that I care about, you know, the budgets and the actual, you know, realistic effects that much, but history has a budget on this show.
Yeah.
Like they're doing some, especially like with the Flatwoods monster last week, they're doing, this is better than if Sci-Fi Channel was doing it.
Well, hold on a second. Now, you saw Krypton's effects; those were pretty damn good.
Okay, yes, but I'm sure DC and Warner Brothers were helping to pay for those effects too.
Yeah. Okay. This is true. Yeah.
And I'll admit, and hopefully someday, maybe after we finish Blue Book, we can talk about the 2002 miniseries Taken. Those effects.
There's no maybe about it. We'll definitely be talking about it.
Oh yes, those effects, even well over a decade ago, those are phenomenal too.
I haven't watched that miniseries in a while, but I'm keen to do so.
Yes, Project Blue Book keeps making me want to pull it out and watch it.
Yeah, sure. I'm definitely looking forward to it, so yeah. Mm-hmm. But no, so I like the visual aspect of how they portrayed the lights and stuff. But also, it amazes me because when they're in the classroom and then he's doing the poll about, okay, how many of you people have seen these lights? And they all put up their hand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many people were in that classroom, but there was a lot.
It's yeah. Like,
how can you try and silence or explain away that many people seeing something that nature? It just boggles my mind, you know, the lengths that people in power or government officials or mm-hmm. what have
would well, go to. The episode itself of Lubbock Lights, the actual real-world incident of the Lubbock Lights. And I don't know if you're aware of the Phoenix Lights from 1997.
No, I'm not.
But there are strong similarities between the two. Whereas with Lubbock, it was a small town out in Texas. And Phoenix, I mean, it's Phoenix, Arizona. No. All right, the Phoenix Lights, a quick crash course. Because actually, I kind of almost wish Project Blue Book could do an episode on something that happened 3-4 decades later.
Well, maybe in the sequel series. Sure. Project Blue Book, the New Year's. Or
the
new class, like Saved by the Bell.
the new class. The Phoenix Lights is... It started off as something very similar with residents of the Phoenix suburbs seeing a V-shaped formation of lights flying over their neighborhoods. And again, this isn't out... in the middle of the country. This is the suburbs of a major American city. And it all accumulated over a span of a couple of nights. It all accumulated with something massive happening over the city. There are so many different photographs and videos. Just Google it. It is some of the most breathtaking UFO footage I've ever seen in my life. Of what looks like seven or eight balls of light just hovering over the Phoenix skyline.
Now, was there any official explanation? Like, did anybody try to...
The official explanation was that the Air Force was conducting training experiments that night and that these were flares.
Okay.
Now, we don't know if that incident... We do not know if it was flares. That's what the government says. I obviously don't tend to believe that, but if this was... If these lights were a part of an actual ship, this ship would have been the size of a football stadium. It was that big.
Now, you said that they were flying a flying V formation?
Yeah.
That just made me think of the Mighty Ducks movie, you know, the hockey movie. I was totally off tangent, but that's the first thing that came to mind.
Here I'm telling you about dramatic real-world UFO incident. The Mighty Ducks.
I'm Canadian. I'm a hockey fan. What do you want to hear? I hear Flying V, and I think of Emilio Estevez. Let's put it in the Blu-ray, and let's go.
Oh, my.
But yeah, no, this is fascinating. I don't know why I clicked it. Look, I was scarred in 1997 because Batman and Robin came out.
Oh, my God.
I mean, that's scarring enough that I probably didn't really pay attention to that story, but that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the few UFO stories over the last 20 years that actually made like the news. Awesome. because if something that big was hovering over the city one night, then yeah,
it's incredible and fascinating. But the other part about this episode that I really enjoyed was the fact that, okay, so Captain Quinn is always the sort of company man, tries to, you know,
toe the military line.
Goes along with the military line. But he starts to experience it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the scene in the car where, like, so he sees the lights and then he gets in the car and the light intensifies and the car starts like shaking and
becoming electrified or magnetized or something.
But it seems to be like it's compressing, like it's.
Yeah.
It was full, like it was. You know what I mean? Like it was almost like if it had been a compactor, like, you know. It wasn't.
And you can see because earlier in the episode, apparently this something similar had happened to a man who was out driving, and they, you know. Quinn and Hynek went to go investigate his car, and it doesn't look like it's been in a crash. It looks like it got like there's a rippling effect.
That's a good terminology for it. Rippling.
Yeah, effect. It looked like it was being squeezed by the air.
So to me, like the fact that he experienced firsthand, and now even he. You're starting to second guess what's going on here. Because, like, okay, at the end of the episode, like, there's a scene where the higher ups of the government officials that have higher clearance than Hynek and Captain Quinn call them in for, you know, a secret debriefing. And, I'm speaking of... General James Harding, played by Neil McDonough, a.k.a. Damien Dark, and General Hugh Valentine, played by Michael Harney. They call them in, and basically, what was their explanation for
them? Their explanation to Hynek and Quinn was that the Lubbock lights were the result of an experimental stealth aircraft. Which that's usually how this goes. It's always some kind of experimental aircraft.
And the funny thing is, they showed them a picture, right, of the aircraft. But when you look at the picture, it doesn't match like anywhere near close to what the shape of the lights were.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's not even close. And Hynek is just sitting there, and you can see on the look on his face is like, BS.
And I love that they're building up to some kind of not fist fight confrontation, but some kind of quote unquote confrontation between Hynek and Neil McDonough's character. What's his name again? I'm sorry, I forget.
It is, let's see, General James Harding.
Okay, between Hynek and General Harding, because Hynek, you know, at the end of the episode, he looks at the photograph of the stealth aircraft and he's like, how, you know, says something along the lines of, how could this have caused, you know, a blackout? And every single time Hynek asks questions, it's just enraging General Harding more and more. And this is, I think, the first episode where they clearly are showing that Harding and Valentine, to them, the sole purpose of Project Blue Book is to just cover up, just find, not investigate the truth at all, just find relatively realistic earthbound explanations for all of this. Which obviously means that they, you know, based off of the reveal that they have a crash saucer, you know, they know more than they're letting on.
Yeah, because they have a crash, like we said last week, they have a crash saucer in their bunker, wherever it was. Now, that, I mean, but the best part for me is not necessarily that Hynek's enraging him, but I like Captain Quinn's response, because yes, like, he gives a salute, he stands up when he walks out of the building, but you can see the pauses and like his physical expression of his body and the way he, like, he's even starting to question. I love that we're seeing that manifest on his face physically and through his movements and stuff. So we're seeing that doubt sort of build within him, and I like how it's building, even though, even as much as he tries to like push it aside to just to be, you know, a good soldier. So that's gonna be...
and we know that Hynek is, I would still put Hynek in the skeptic column, but he's more open-minded to other beliefs. And because I know how J. Allen Hynek actually, you know, during the course of Project Blue Book, from starting off as an outright skeptic to being a full-on believer, I cannot wait to see over this season and hopefully many seasons to come his evolution from skeptic, who's just kind of questioning. All he's doing is just asking questions. All, you know, to becoming a full-on believer that we are not alone.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And the other small bit of the episode that I really liked, it was a small moment. Remember when Hynek's wife, Mimi Hynek, was she was shopping for that shelter for the...
Which first off, I know where you're getting... Before, I love how, and I got to see if this is actually real and what happened, that local hardware stores were selling nuclear bomb shelters.
Yeah.
That were just, all they were was just wood.
Yeah, that's pretty...
That it's like, what would protect you more from a nuclear blast? A wooden shelter or hiding under your desk? I mean, come on.
Yeah, really, at this point. But I love the fact that, you know, so his wife goes in because he's out of town. And the neighbor has a shelter, and the neighbors don't want to share their wooden shelter in case if anything goes wrong. So she goes and buys one. And so the store owner or manager, whatever he was, says, oh, yeah, we have them. She said, he said, okay, come back with your husband.
And, with your hubby. I love he says hubby. All right, have the hubby drop by tomorrow, and we'll talk things out.
Yeah, and she's like, no, how about we talk things out right now? So
yeah,
even though we're talking about, you know, being in the 50s, I love that she had that, because that was a very different time than now. I love that they have that strong female presence within her. And
yeah,
she reminded me of like a 1950s Lois Lane.
And I think she could play Lois.
I think she could. By the way, the actress is Laura Minnelli, and she was actually in Watchmen.
Wasn't she a Jenny Slater?
She is that.
I don't know. It's just like the Dr. Manhattan.
Dr. Manhattan's girlfriend, fiance, whatever she was.
The one that quote unquote he gave cancer to.
Yeah, Jenny Slater. That's correct. You're right. And also, she was in a short, a far too short-lived show called Alphas on Sci-Fi. It lasted 2 seasons and was unceremoniously canceled. And I'm still upset about it. And every once in a while, I may go out and rant on it. So just be prepared. She was very good in that. So, and she's a good Canadian girl. So I got to support her.
I do love exactly like what she says to the cashier after he says, "Have your hubby drop by tomorrow. We'll talk things out." No, the hubby is out of town, so the wifey is here to pick up the bomb shelter because she's scared for her family, and you will charge, you know, you will charge my account, and you will have it delivered tomorrow morning so I can put it together.
I just love the
I love that moment.
I love the sass and mm-hmm. attitude she gave. It was great. And again, I just got 1950s Lois vibes from her. I don't know. But yeah, if they ever do like a Red Sun, Elseworlds adaptation, live action, Caster's Lois. Or if they ever do a 1930s Superman Elseworlds.
God, I would love to see, you know, a one-off Elseworlds adaptation of the It's Superman novel. And I haven't even read that thing, but I want to. Where it actually takes place in, like, the 30s and 40s.
You know, Caster's Wellesley.
Yeah. Amy Adams is probably done, so.
Probably. I love the episode. It was a great episode. What would you rate it out of 10?
Oh, God. God, I hate doing these rating systems.
Would you prefer the letter grade? What do you prefer? I don't know.
I'll give it.
You know we got to do this every week. I don't know why you're getting all flustered over it.
Because my opinions can change drastically from week to week on any given subject.
If they change, we'll have to come back and adjust the rating. That's
I would give this a... I probably gave the other two episodes maybe Bs or something. I would actually give this one an... A-. I think this is the, you know, only three episodes in, so there's not much to compare it to, but I think this is probably the best episode of the season so far.
Yeah, I'll give it a solid A. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed it, and this series is going in a direction that I'm liking.
Mm-hmm.
And let's hope that
History Channel renews it.
Yes. And we will keep you posted on the developments of that as we know. So with that out of the way, it's time to shift our focus to away from Texas.
All the way to New Mexico.
And specifically Roswell, New Mexico. And we're discussing episode 2 of the series. What happened in the second episode, right? What was the gist of it?
The second episode still has Kyle being told by Alex Maine's military father, you know, about a potential alien threat and all these, you know, burn victims from the 1940s that had a handprint on them, similar to what Kyle saw Liz have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that just immediately brought back to mind thoughts of Nisato from the original TV show. I probably actually tweeted out those thoughts too.
Probably.
Yeah, because I kind of hoped they kind of bring in the Nisato character.
But you didn't live tweet them, did you?
Maybe I live tweeted like a couple of things, but that's it. I wasn't as bad.
No spoilers.
As a former co-host. As a former co-host of yours, I probably wasn't as bad as he was when it comes to live tweeting.
Okay, good.
I'm sorry, I'm like drawing a blank here for a second. Been a long week. We also had Max. And I'm drawing a blank on his partner's name. It's not Sheriff Valenti. Some.
The blonde female sheriff, correct?
The blonde deputy. I don't know if they can have multiple deputies. I don't know. Investigating a noise complaint from people who we obviously find out to be racist a little bit later on in the episode because I'm guessing that this episode takes place on or near the anniversary of the car accident that the town seems to want to blame Liz's sister Rosa on. We also had progress in the Alex and Michael relationship.
Okay, yeah, that's gonna be different.
Accumulating in a scene I very much enjoyed.
I predicted that you would, actually.
And also we had one hell of a twist that the psychic bond between Max and Liz was able to see that Max was present with Rosa the night that she died. And this is a whole new, I was not expecting this, especially as a fan of the original. You know, the first episode tried to, you know, kind of set up Max and Liz as, you know, lovers from across the stars, like the original show. But it's almost like they're starting to build up towards some animosity and some antagonism between the two, because Liz knows that Max is lying about any involvement or knowledge of what happened to Rosa that final night.
Yeah, I think ultimately it'll go there.
Mm-hmm.
It'll go to the relationship angle.
I mean, come on. Clark and Lana also had some antagonism, too.
That was just so poorly written. I mean, they teach writing classes, and they're like, here's what not to do, and they show those episodes to small people. At least that's my understanding of it. In my own headcanon, by the way. But what I liked about this episode was several things. First of all, you know, Max coming to the rescue of
Liz's father.
Liz's father. That's when the shooters from the first episode go back and attack her father, and mm-hmm. sort of the rage that built up within Max to the point where
he would have killed that one guy if Michael and Isabel hadn't shown up.
Yeah, that's very true, and that was kind of surprising and a little bit shocking to see. But also the idea that when they bring up the burn victims from the 40s. And that whole mystery. And when I'm thinking about, how she realized that's how the truth behind her sister's death is because she had a burn mark.
I must have forgotten that detail.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Whereas Kyle Valenti, the doctor at this point, reveals to her, look, I've been doing some digging into your sister's case. Here's the made-up, autopsy report, and here are the actual facts.
Yeah, the autopsy that was, the report that was shown to the family compared to the real one.
Yes. And so I'm wondering now, because I had thought after the first episode, I thought, okay, they're gonna do a sort of, in my head, I thought, they're going to do a storyline where something happened, it was an accident, Michael probably did something, and the sister died. But then I thought, could there be another alien?
Yes. As soon as I saw a burn victim handprint, I mean, it's a good mystery for this new show, and it is intriguing, but if you know the old show, the original show, you got to be thinking Nisato, who was he was another member of the another survivor of the crash, who could shapeshift, and he kind of acted as a very violent guardian angel of Max, Isabel, and Michael from the distance.
Because that's what I thought as well. I thought as soon as I saw him, I go, okay, they're not going with my initial thought, and now they're going with this idea. And I thought it was going to be him as well. That was my first thought as well. So great minds think alike. And so, yeah, I'd be interested to see if they follow through with that or if it's something entirely off the rails. I'm willing to bet that that's...
And if they bring in the Sato, I'll be very curious to see if they're going to bring in the whole Tess character, too.
Oh, that was played by that Australian actress.
Emily DeRavine in the original
show. Oh, I had such a crush on her. In that. I mean,
yeah, I thought she was cute, too.
Is this a revelation to anybody? I mean, really, come on.
You had a crush on Tess, I had a crush on Max.
Hey, different strokes for different folks, right?
Yeah, I like the Tess character until, you know, the second season that her motivations were revealed.
But yeah, so I had a crush on her, and I also had a crush on Isabel.
The original?
Catherine.
Catherine Heigl.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'll ascribe Earths to all of these people in due time. But, yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see where they go, if they go the path of the original show, or if they do, in fact, switch things up and and throw us a curveball.
It would be cool, as a fan of the original, to see these other characters be brought in a different way. And it would also be neat and would throw us off our toes if they, you know, went a different route with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still willing to bet, you know, put money down that it's, you know, gonna be a new version of Nisato.
Oh, for sure.
That's responsible. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see either way. I'll be happy for wherever they go. Because I'm loving the direction of the series. And two episodes in, I'm like, please renew it. Please renew it. Please renew
please,
it.
Yes. It's getting good reviews, and we're both loving it. I love, you know, their new takes on more classic themes and concepts from the original show, like that scene in the bar with Liz, Maria, and Alex. It just made me so stupid happy just to see that core trio is still a very close-knit group of friends, just like the Liz, Maria, and Alex of the original.
But I also got to say, you know what really made me... it was really kind of weird when you mentioned that Michael and Alex were having a get-together at the end of the episode. That wasn't weird, because I kind of expected that, where it was going.
Yeah.
But when Max goes to Isabel's house, and then things happen
I'm looking up this character right now just so I can find it.
No, you're looking at what? No, remember at the end of the episode when he went to Isabel's
house? No, I don't think that was Isabel's house,
wasn't it?
No, that was his police partner's house.
Oh, so what? Because
Isabel's a sister.
Yeah, hold on a second. But that's where it was getting weird. I mean, wait a minute. See, they're both, unfortunately, they're both blonde. They're both stunning. But from far away, listen, I don't have a 4K TV. They all look like them. No, but I could have sworn she was Isabel. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. I paused because I recorded it to avoid commercials. I paused and I'm like, oh, wait a second here. Is that Isabel? Because if it is, there's something so wrong with this. And this is totally... Talk about taking it in a new direction. This is... Oh, well, I'm glad I was wrong. Okay, good.
Oh, my
scared. I thought they were going somewhere else with that. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I mean, are they actual DNA relatives? Yes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I am right. I didn't get that wrong. I'm like, maybe I have this wrong. Maybe they just say they're related, but they're not. But they are. Okay, good. And it wasn't her, so I'm okay. I'm good. All right, okay. I wasn't traumatized, folks. I thought I might have been, but no, we're good.
Oh, my God.
I thought there was some incestuous crap going on. There's not.
I wonder if it's this. I'm going to have to either watch the previous episode again or wait for confirmation next week. But I think it might be this Jenna Cameron character.
Yes, played by... And I know her because she was in the originals, which I watched. Don't ask me. I watched it. Screw you people. I like what I like. What you don't, too damn bad.
And seeing Max get it on well.
I was like, what's going on here? But I mean, I'm glad we're okay. We're good.
We're good. We're good. I don't know where the hell you were going with that, but okay.
Well, it scared me a bit there, so we're good. We're all right. We're good.
It brought back weird memories, you know, as I was watching the original show and it was doing reruns on Sci-Fi and learning that the actors who played the original Max and Isabel actually dated in real life briefly during the filming of the show. I was like, you guys are playing brother and sister. Stop it.
How can you do that?
Exactly. It's like when I see two actors play, like, here's the best example. Elizabeth Olsen and Aaron Taylor Johnson. They were husband and wife in 2014 for Godzilla.
Yeah.
Then they played twins, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in Avengers Age of Ultron. One year they're married, the next year they're twins.
But to be fair, they were, I don't care what the Avengers, what continuity they couldn't take. They're Magneto's children, and that's one messed up family, so I could see that happening.
In a weird way, it kind of fits in with the Ultimate Marvel Universe, where
Scarlet Witch and
where they were a little too close for comfort in that.
They had a very cruel intentions thing happening. Oh boy! Hey, listen, I love Sarah Michelle Gellar in 1980s. I still do, damn it. So that was weird, but the weirdness now went away that you explained it to me. Okay, good. So what would you rate this episode then? Because I loved it.
I loved it too. It was a shock to see Liz.
I love how the rating always stumps you. It's like, okay.
I don't like doing letter grades on TV episodes. Okay. I can do that with movies.
Do number grade then. Do numbers.
I can't do that. 78%.
That's what you're giving it?
No. I like the episode overall. I have not, second week in a row, I have not been disappointed at all. It was a hell of a shock for this new twist in the Max and Liz friendship relationship. It's gonna be interesting because, like, I still definitely believe that Nacedo was involved in Rosa somehow, but that doesn't explain. Like, at first I might have thought, what if Nacedo was, because since in the original show he was a shapeshifter, what if he just looked like Max back then? But then why would Max have that memory? So even if Nacedo was involved, Max was there that night.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah. All right. So you're still not off the hook.
I hate you, Adam.
I know.
Let's give it another A.
All right, cool. Yeah. To me, I like this episode because it built on the foundations of the first, and it threw us some curveballs, some unexpected curveballs, and especially with a reboot series. I like when they do that.
Yeah, I like it that they're not just just retelling with new actors, right. And
it's not a paint by the numbers.
This is, I think we said this last week. This is how you reboot. You know, you keep the core of what these characters are, but you do something different. You do something a little unique. You play around with, you know, twists and whatnot, and
yeah, and I mean
it works.
Every week that I'm, that, you know, now 2 weeks in a row, I've been brought into this this world, this universe, and spend time with these characters, and I'm continually engrossed by their relationships and the situations that they're going through. So, I'm gonna give it an A as well. So, two solid episodes for both shows. And they got me looking forward to Tuesday nights, which is an incredibly packed night for television. But like I said,
so packed that I'm gonna have to start making Project Blue Book my Wednesday show.
But PBR exists for a reason, and I'm making full use of it. So that brings this episode to a close. Ryan, if people want to interact with you on social media, where do they do that?
They can follow me on Twitter at TheAmazingHaraiGuy. If you want to argue with me or follow me, I'm only going to block you and mute you if you're being a prick. So, you know, whatever. On Facebook, it's Ryan Heelsman. And I look forward to talking with you guys.
Awesome. And if you want to follow me, you can do so on Twitter at Superhero Sci-Fi. I made it nice and easy for everybody. Backhandedly, because that wasn't my intention when I signed into Twitter. if you want to join the Tales from the DC Multiverse Facebook page, you can find me there. You can request membership to the group, and we'll add you, and we can have conversations there. And I look forward to talking to new people about all this cool superhero and sci-fi stuff that we all love to varying degrees. And then, until next time, whether you're listening to this podcast on a weekday or weekend, we hope you have a fabulous one, and join us next time, but never forget to live long and prosper. So long, buddy.
Take care.